On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon and welcome to On the Radar, your trusted midday news bulletin on Eagle FM. It's Monday, May the 12th, and you are tuned into our second bulletin of the day, airing from 1300 hours to 1430, Monday to Friday. Now, as always, we bring you the latest breaking news, sharp analysis, and thoughtful commentary to keep you informed and engaged. Now, today we take a moment to acknowledge International Nurses Day, which is observed May 12th. Now, we salute all nurses across Namibia and around the globe for their exceptional services, dedication, and compassion, their role in strengthening healthcare systems and supporting patients through some of life's most difficult moments that cannot be overstated. Now, as we kick off the week, we'll also bring you fresh insights from the Villager e-paper and go deeper into the economic and social stories shaping the nation. Now, wherever you are, at work, in traffic, or catching a midday break, stay with us. This is On the Radar, your news, your voice, and your perspective. Now, don't just tune in, be part of the conversation as well by dialing on 083-288-401 to share your thoughts, ask questions, or weigh in on the topics that matter most to you. Leading our news bulletin this afternoon, Namibia ranks 136 on the Global Human Development Index, also known as HDI, in 2025. The HDI is a composite index that measures the average achievement in three basic dimensions of human development: a long and healthy life, knowledge, and a decent standard of living. Now, Namibia is classified in the medium development ranking in the world. In this placement, the latest report notes that the country has achieved on average life expectancy of 67.4 years. Now, what does this all mean? Let's expand that further with our reporter Dwight Links. Good afternoon, Dwight, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
How are you doing, Happy, and good afternoon to the listeners.
I'm doing very well, thank you. Now, Dwight, what does the Human Development Index (HDI) measurement look at, with Namibia being ranked 136?
Well, specifically, Happy, if we particularly look at the HDI in its entirety, this is a measurement that has technically happened for the past 35 years. So you can basically say Namibia had been in part of this particular measurement. And much of it obviously looks at the investments that are done specifically in education, standard of living, as well as also other particular factors that contribute towards the development of the human capital in a country. And for the listeners just to understand, Namibia greatly places emphasis on human development. We have, which is obviously seen at the start of every year with our budget release, the national budget release, yeah, wherein you always see education and health receive the two largest chunks of the budget. Many would argue, in most cases, obviously, that's to look after the operational needs of both ministries, which is true because you need continuous service delivery. But part of this ultimately is reflected in something like this Human Development Index that the United Nations Development Program assesses every second year, because they speak of a measurement that Namibia, we did not move from the 2023 level prior to this particular report that was released, obviously, at the start of this month, mm-hmm, that being the 2025 edition.
Yeah. Now, who are the top countries of this ranking and who are the lowest? I did see that South Africa comes in at 106.
Well, the top 10, let me even just highlight the top 20 for that matter, yeah, Happy, because the top 20 obviously speaks towards a multitude of factors that they obviously highlight. So, you obviously asked what are some of the contributing factors. There's something known as the life expectancy at birth, and obviously also a life expectancy from birth, specifically for how old people live. And life expectancy usually is associated to your national health systems that have been installed in your country.
Yeah.
So if we look at the top 20 countries, specifically the lowest is the South Korea, the Republic of Korea. The highest is Iceland. But just to highlight to you, much of the Scandinavian countries are found within the top 20. So you've got Iceland number one, Norway number two, Switzerland number three, Denmark number four, Germany number five, Sweden number six, Australia number seven, Hong Kong, which is part of the Chinese, which is part of China, at position number eight, the Netherlands at position number nine, and Belgium at position number 10, which is then in the bottom 20, you get Belgium, Ireland, Finland, Singapore, UK, UAE, the United Arab Emirates, Canada, Liechtenstein, New Zealand, the US, and then South Korea.
Yeah.
So this particular picture is one just about the amount of expected school or the investment in education systems, because they factor this in based upon sustainable development goals. So how long do people on average live in these countries? This is about the highest being at 83 or at 82.
Okay.
The amount of expected years to be in school or of schooling, which factors into the recent labor force survey discussion that we've also had in Namibia. These guys, in most of these countries, the highest is 19.3 years, and actually the highest is in Australia at 20.7 years,
mm-hmm.
and then 19.3, which is in New Zealand. This obviously highlights the amount of exposure to education systems that, or the most exposure of education system that an individual goes through. And then you also have the average schooling. So you've got the expected, how long you should be in school,
yeah.
and the average in terms of how long do these people actually stay in education systems. The highest year primarily being 13.9, which is almost 14 years. Actually, there is Germany has 14.3 in that scenario as well. So all these particular contributing factors of education and health systems do play a key role in specifically having a very sound, should I say, human development, if you can call it like a resource in Namibia.
Uh-huh, I see. And Dwight, what is the core talking point from this year's HDI report? What's the particular focal thing that they're focusing on?
Well, they were focusing predominantly, happy on the disruption and the impact that the artificial intelligence obviously is going to create. In most cases, what the authors of the report, who are all UNDP related specialists, they highlight that there's a mass misconfusion specifically in terms of how many people understand the use of AI. They, are also, highlighting that that people should look at AI as an extra tool
mm-hmm.
to improve on procedures, processes, and systems, not as a replacement mechanism that is there to replace the human capital in the equation of production, and that includes of everything mostly in the realm of an economy. Some of the other particular details that they also highlight has been how quickly is it that people can stop fighting with each other?
Mm-hmm.
For example, the conflict scenarios across the world. Why does it look like we're sitting with more conflict than actually trying to improve on the various human capitals across the world?
Mm-hmm.
And this has been one of the unique questions, because one of the other messaging that is also highlighted by the authors of the report is that many people are now talking about how AI plays a role specifically in warfare, in conflict, in other aspects of production without the use or the introduction or the availability or even the insertion of human capital in that entire discussion. Not to say that warfare is a very good thing or conflicts are, but they also noted specifically why is it that AI is being discussed in line with the negatives as opposed with the positives of human development and societal development.
Okay, interesting. Now, Dwight, can we expect Namibia to move up the ladder in this ranking, and what should Namibia prioritize in order to actually get there?
Well, some of the particular factors is happy that when we look at the discussion specifically where Namibia finds itself on these particular rankings. Now, I said in the article that I wrote in position 136, Cabo Verde is above us, but people in Cabo Verde live longer than us. specifically. That is what has been measured. People in Cabo Verde are actually exposed to less school or education than us, even though we have a larger population than the island nation of Cabo Verde. And even though our gross national income per capita, which is something related to our gross domestic product, because gross national income is just the reverse of GDP, specifically what each person earns based upon the overall production of the country's economy. Now, Namibia's GNI, gross national income, stands at $10,900. Now, $10,900 per person is a lot of money, Happy. However, the particular discussion that obviously is left out of this measurement is in terms of which industries actually form as the bedrock for this particular GNI. And you would be very surprised to find that very few Namibians actually work in these industries that have this high level of gross national income or gross domestic product representation on a statistical sheet for Namibia. So your question about the improvement mechanism, the unfortunate thing is when you look at aspects in terms of the recent discussions in the parliament where the budget motivations are still ongoing or ended last week Friday, much of the discussions have been about how to improve on processes in the public health sector, not the private health sector, public health sector, or to improve on processes of the overall education sector, because in the maiden speeches of the deputy minister and the minister herself, they both highlighted why the ministry is now so big, specifically that it's not just Ministry of Education, but now it's Ministry of Innovation, Culture. What's the other one's name? Something Creative is also in there. Arts is also in there. Is that there is now this focus primarily to expand on the creative sector that needs to form part of a employment creation mechanism specifically for the youth. And this also includes sport, because the letter S is also in there. And sport is also one of these particular neglected industries in Namibia. If I give you a direct example specifically of the top 20 countries, they have very stable creative sectors, Happy. Specifically, if you take a look at position number 20, which is South Korea, many young ladies in Namibia are actually huge fans and huge consumers of South Korean content, specifically TV shows and even music. I mean, for so long I've had to hear of BTS. I didn't know who BTS was, just to find out it was a Korean boy band, and they were a global phenomena. And Korea is one of the largest exporters of cultural products, music and movies and TV productions across the world. The same to also for the United States. The same to also for the United Kingdom. The same to also for Germany, Denmark. There's also Australia. There's also the Benelux region, which is Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg. And you find all these strong systems embedded in the education, but also partnered up with affiliated or auxiliary functions like education employment creation. Alongside the education system. Just to give you an example, Happy, I use this example because it was explained to me just last week by someone that's currently studying in China, that the lecturers in China are all younger than us. I mean, even younger than you, Happy, because these lecturers are like 26, 25 at universities in China. And I asked the reason as to why is this so? Well, it's to assist those particular youthful people in your economy that can't find an immediate job, but they do have the skills. They can have the support in terms of finding a job in the institution where they've trained at, where they've reached heightened levels. And I remember this is someone that has studied when they became 19, went into university, studied and all that, achieved the highest education level, a doctorate degree. And then they are repurposed into the education system to literally dispense further knowledge in the education system. So as that you don't see foreigners or foreign lecturers being in your universities, but rather You have your own particular knowledge base participating. This has also been one of the biggest discussions because back in last year, 2024, the NCRST brought out their first research and development report, which highlighted that there is a massive gaping hole of research and development in the humanities side of things, mm-hmm. not in the technical side of things. For example, not in IT, not in engineering, not in the medicines, mm-hmm. not in psychology even. The other things like history, like law, mm-hmm. and all these other particular subject matters, we lack researchers and expertise on that.
Yeah.
And primarily, the questions have not been answered in terms of as to why. One of the biggest questions, the one big answer that has been answered, has been in some cases, government funding has actually lessened in supporting research and development initiatives, which is key. But then there's also notions that other sectors can ultimately also fund these particular things, but it has become a discussion on who owns the intellectual property to this research. If you also look, Happy, specifically at the exposure to education, and this is now where Namibia does fall short greatly,
mm-hmm.
Specifically that in most cases, so the word mean is an average of some sort because you get mean, mode, and median. Mean just highlights, you know, what is the overall exposure in education that Namibians actually are exposed to.
Yeah.
They speak here of 7.3 years on the average that they're highlighting. 7.3 years, Happy, actually does resonate with the reason as to why we only have the highest, the most common education level in the 500,000 Namibians that are employed out of 3 million Namibians is that most occurring or the most commonly found education level is just grade 12.
Mm.
Now, this obviously speaks volumes because there's also in that labor force survey that the NSA highlighted at the start of this year or released at the start of this year that there are also other worrying factors to look into. For example, there's very few people in the large companies or corporations of Namibia that have education past grade 12. You also find a scenario in terms of that there's very few people ultimately that have vocational training in the from the VTCs or the mm-hmm, vocational mm-hmm. centers across the country, which speaks of that we've got too few skilled people and probably too many specialized people with specialized education, for example, like myself, in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So you see these particular imbalances as well. On top of this, you also realize that on average, that's the most that many people have been, the most level of education people have been exposed to has been at least a grade 12. So the development highlights that it speaks to a few things that Namibia has to fix, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for example, how much education should the average Namibian been exposed to? Which obviously also speaks towards what investments are going to take place there from the annual budgeting by the Ministry of Education itself. I mean, this is a worrisome statistic because on the, if you know how much for how many years we should be exposed, because they also tally this, the UNDP guys, they note that we should be exposed to 12 years of education, but the most amount of education that many Namibians are exposed to is 7.3 years, is a worrying trend in that regard.
Okay, Dwight, thank you so much for breaking down to us what the HDI measurement looks at and what it's all about. For now, I guess we'll stick there and hopefully you will continue to educate us on furthermore whether we do rank up higher or how.
Not a problem, Abby.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye. And there you had it from Dwight, just breaking down to us the Human Development Index, where Namibia is ranking 136 at position 136. And just for knowledge sake, South Africa comes in at 106, position 106. Now, with that being said, we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we're back, we'll be bringing you yet more news. Stay with us.
Yeah. Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Did you know that in Namibia over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. Namibia continues to make strong strides in the fight against tuberculosis, TB, with the Ministry of Health and Social Services reporting substantial progress through the National TB and Leprosy Program. Now, according to the Ministry of Health, the country achieved a treatment success rate of 88% for drug susceptible TB cases in 2024, just shy of the World Health Organization's 90% target. Now, for drug-resistant TB, the treatment success rate reached 74%, a notable achievement given the complexities of managing resistant strains. Now, the minister also highlighted that nearly all TB patients in Namibia underwent HIV testing, demonstrating near universal coverage of those who tested positive for HIV. An impressive 99% were initiated on antiretroviral therapy, also known as ART, reinforcing the country's commitment to integrated health care. Now, these achievements are direct results of the dedication of our healthcare workers, the decentralization of TB services to communities beyond health facilities, and the successful integration of TB care into primary health care, the minister stated. Now, the progress marks significant step in Namibia's ongoing public health efforts, placing the nation closer to meeting international TB control targets and improving the overall health outcomes for its citizens. Now, let's engage Dr. Rusa, who is the acting chief medical officer and national TB and for National TB and Leprosy Program. Doctor, good afternoon and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon to you and good afternoon to your listener.
Doctor, kindly give out your full name. I just realized that I haven't done so.
Okay. My name is Nonurai Ruswa. I work in the National TB and Leprosy Program in the Ministry of Health and Social Services, as you have stated.
Now, Doctor, what key factors contributed to the 88% treatment success rate for susceptible TB in 2024?
Yes, it's susceptible TB. You can also call it sensitive TB.
Okay.
It would still be accurate. First, it comes to the government commitment. We know that our government buys all the medicines and pays for all the diagnosis of TB in this country free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
So this commitment, coupled with the early diagnosis, high capacity of the healthcare workers, we have well-trained healthcare workers, and also we have support from the community health workers. So
yeah,
we have people within the communities who are there who are supporting patients to take their treatment. And then, of course, we cannot discount the effort of the people of Namibia themselves when they are told about the disease, when they are encouraged to take their medicines. They do take their medicines. And for the most part, we can and we have achieved high treatment success rates, as you have stated.
Now, Doctor, managing drug-resistant TB is known to be really complex. Now, how is Namibia preparing to address the rising threat of drug-resistant TB in the coming years?
Yes, drug-resistant TB has always been a problem. More so, each time we are introducing new drugs, we often see this threat of drug resistance. So in Namibia, you may be aware, sometime in December last year, the then Minister of Health and Social Services, Dr. Shangula, launched the new guidelines for the management of drug-resistant TB. And within those guidelines, there was a new algorithm to make sure that we diagnose people with drug-resistant TB early. So what we do is every patient who gets diagnosed with TB, we already incorporate the new tests that can pick that there is resistance to the medicines that we use to treat them. So if we can do this early, these patients can be treated early. In addition to that, within these guidelines, we have treatment regimens that are up to standard recommended by the World Health Organization. So these are mainly shorter oral treatment regimens with the newly available drugs. And we think they are evidence-based. We have good evidence that they can actually achieve quite high treatment successes if we follow them as recommended.
What causes a TB patient to become resistant to the drugs being administered to them?
Yes, there are two situations that can lead to someone having drug-resistant TB. So the first and what most people know is that if you are not managed properly, typically you are given your pills to swallow, but here you are choosing how many to swallow. You are not swallowing properly. You are skipping some days. This actually encourages the development of drug-resistant TB. So often you see people have been diagnosed with TB. They don't take their treatment properly. Then later they come back with the more resistant form of this TB. And this can even get worse and worse and worse each time they try to take the treatment. So this is the first scenario when someone is not managed properly, either by themselves or sometimes they are not managed properly by healthcare workers, but typically it's the patients themselves who fail to manage themselves well. The second scenario is when you get such patients who then spread to their loved ones or their friends, those loved ones and their friends, from the get-go, they start already with drug-resistant TB, not through no fault of their own, but because this unfortunate situation was spread onto them from the other person who did not take the treatment properly.
Now, what are the main challenges in achieving the remaining 2% to meet the World Health Organization's 90% target?
Yes, this is unfortunate. I think, as we all know, the more you are successful at something, the more difficult that last mile becomes. And this is actually where we find ourselves. So typically, the problems that we are facing are those people who we diagnose late, either they present to the health facilities late or they have complicated diseases or complicated presentation. We find only late that they have TB. So this patient often die or we cannot treat them successfully, even though we have given them all the medicines. So these patients, we diagnose them late, they are more likely to die. And then we also have, as you can imagine, we still have this problem of patients who do not complete their treatment. So it does happen sometimes that as much as most Namibians are diligent, they are able to complete their treatment as prescribed, but we still get some people who still have challenges completing the prescribed treatment, and sometimes it's because of the support they are receiving or lack thereof. So we often term them lost to follow-up when patients either decide not to continue the treatment or they just disappear on us, or as they say nowadays, they ghost us while they're supposed to be on treatment. So these groups of patients are the ones who are responsible for us not reaching our target treatment success rates, typically.
I see. Now, how do TB services, how have TB services been integrated into primary healthcare, especially in rural areas? And would you say educational awareness has been well integrated?
Right. We can never say we are 100% there, but there is a lot of effort that has been going into this. So from the time we adopted the primary healthcare concept in this country, I think the decision has always been to make sure that whenever we have TB cases, they are treated at the nearest facility or the lowest level health point that they can get to. So patients have access to treatment of TB at the lowest facilities, and of late, even for drug-resistant TB, patients can actually get treatment at lower facilities.
Okay.
And then TB diagnosis, we often also try to make sure that it is available at the lowest facility. So although we may not have all the tests there, but we have the healthcare workers that are there, typically the nurses, they are able to advise or even to collect samples from the patients that can then go to higher facility for diagnosis. So this, we think it has been well integrated. And of late, we've been talking a lot more about community health workers. So instead of just being at the facility, we want these services as much as possible within the community. So community health workers in general, we've been trying to get them trained on TB so that they can also participate in the diagnostic process for TB and also support people that are having TB to complete treatment. We also, in addition to this integrated service delivery at those levels, we have also been trying to do community outreach. So that is reaching out to the community and try to participate in campaigns for diagnosing TB in the different communities, particularly in those high-burden communities. So we are not there yet, but we are trying to capacitate all healthcare workers at the different levels to be familiar with TB, be able to diagnose and also be able to treat at least the basic forms of TB.
Well, we are still there, Doctor. Before I do actually let you go, I wouldn't do people justice if we came and talk about TB and not ask you to actually point out the signs of somebody having TB. Just the other day, a friend of mine has been, I've noticed, been coughing for more than 2 weeks, and I ended up actually saying maybe you should get tested for TB. So just those symptoms that we should actually be on the lookout for somebody who might actually have TB.
Thank you very much. And you did well with your friends by telling them to go get tested for TB. And this is exactly what we encourage the community to do. So signs and symptoms of TB, they vary, but we have the five most common. So these five most common are coughing, fever, loss of weight, losing weight, becoming thin, sweating a lot at night. So meaning as you are sleeping at night, you find that your blankets or your sheets are becoming wet or your pajamas are becoming wet.
Yeah.
And we also have lymph node enlargement. So these are swellings either in the neck or in the groin or armpit area.
Okay.
So these are some of the most common symptoms. But you also get some others such as pain in the chest and especially coughing out blood. And the more prolonged these symptoms are, the more likely they are to be pointing towards TB. So typically, we normally say if these symptoms have been around for 2 weeks, we strongly suspect that it might actually be TB. So as you have done yourself, if you see someone with such symptoms, please, as much as possible, advise them to go get tested for TB. Because if they have TB and you are sitting with that person, they are busy spreading it to you and your other loved ones. So this is very important. However, I will also say that it is possible for TB to be asymptomatic. There will be some patients who will not have any symptoms at all, but if we go and make the diagnosis or do the necessary test, we can still pick out that they do have TB. And there is a lot of evidence nowadays that we can actually pick TB in someone who has not complained of any symptoms, especially if we go out during this outreach TB screening campaigns.
So in other words, it's possible to actually catch the virus. TB is also known as a virus, right? So it's
Related, yes. It's a, we generally say TB is a bacteria.
Okay.
Yeah. HIV is the one which is a virus.
Okay.
But they are both microorganisms or bugs or germs, if you put it that way.
So it's possible to get the bacteria that's related to TB and get the symptoms, get and they disappear for some time without you feeling anything, and then they become
asymptomatic.
Asymptomatic. Yeah.
Correct.
In other words, the symptoms are not detectable or not so obvious. And then actually after some time, you do realize that you do have TB.
That is correct. And you may be even spreading without those symptoms. So it can actually happen, yes.
I see.
Which is why it's actually important. Whenever we, if you have someone who has TB within your circle, it's also important for yourself to get checked up just in case you might get TB. And whenever you hear people coming and doing some screening campaigns for TB, mm-hmm. make sure you participate. Don't walk away and say, no, I cannot get TB, or no, I'm not sick, I don't need to go. It is important to participate in such campaigns. Whenever we say we are screening, it's mm-hmm. important to participate, because you might be carrying this without knowing.
And spreading it without knowing.
That is possible, yes.
Okay. Dr. Rusua, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin and educating us. I'm sure that the listeners have actually been sensitized to be more active and vigilant when it comes to fighting TB.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to the listeners.
Okay. And there you had it. We pause here, but more news, more insights coming your way right after this. Stick around. You're tuned into On the Reader News Bulletin.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And with that being said, today's edition of the Villager e-paper is out. Monday's edition covers the following headlines. Meat sector struggles as farmers rebuild herds. Now, beef prices surge amid low supply. NAMU ranks 136th in Global Human Development Index. Wildfires destroy 100,000 hectares in Kavango East yearly. Kurunkuru Expo Gala Dinner raises over 500,000 Namibian dollars, doubling 2024 figures. Economic transformation hinges on Rebo's entrepreneurship ecosystem. First time at UNAM. Sports Minister reaffirms commitment to Namibian sports. Grab your copy of today's e-paper right from your mobile phone, delivered free of charge. That is by you sending a text message on 081-200-4144 and subscribe to receive tri-weekly dose of social and economic news. Now we go ahead with our news items. The Government of the Republic of Namibia, in collaboration with the Semi Yuma Foundation, is calling on all citizens to plant trees throughout the month of May in remembrance of the founding president, Dr. Sam Nyoma. This nationwide initiative coincides with the celebration of Dr. Sam Nyoma's birthday on 12 May and aims to honor his legacy through a symbolic and environmentally meaningful gesture. Now, citizens are encouraged to plant trees wherever they are, at home, in schools, in workplaces, or community spaces, as a tribute to Dr. Nyoma's enduring contributions to Namibia's independence and national building efforts. Now, with this being said, we have caught up with farmer Josiah Shipingana to hear his say on this. Good afternoon, Josiah Shipingana, and welcome to On the Reader News Bulletin.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you? And thank you very much to Eagle FM and the entire management.
So today, the government of the Republic of Namibia, alongside the Sam Nyoma Foundation, is calling on all citizens to plant trees throughout the month of May in remembrance of the founding president, Dr. Sam Nyoma. Now, for you being a farmer, what does this call mean for you, for Namibians being urged to plant trees throughout the month of May?
No, this is very important, and as you alluded to say, it's actually a legacy that was already there by the founding president, and that speak enough to the nation. It's the chance currently, the position that we have on the table currently is just for us to upgrade on it and keep it going. Now, when we say in general planting a tree, it's not necessarily a tree probably to contribute to humidity. For example, and shade, for example, and also maybe to, how do we call it, to what we call humans. Mm-hmm. But also we should look at also in orchard, in the related way, we also need to look at in orchard where we are planting to get shade and the same. But here we are also looking at to get fruits. In other words, not only to provide shade and the other things I have mentioned, mm-hmm. but also to look at deeply to look at on the side of food so that we can able to respond very strongly and positively toward the food security, job creations, social economic, just to name a few. Yeah, but that can only be achieved mm-hmm. through skill transformation, equipping and enhancing local people through what we call training need and skill transformations.
Mm. So Josiah, perhaps the call to plant trees should perhaps come with more significance to say which type of trees we should plant, as I'm deriving from what you're saying. And also, whom would you say could be responsible to transfer skills for those who want to plant these trees?
Yeah, it's very important, not only to the nation as a nation, but it's also important to individual with a know-how or those who are already equipped with a skill who can able to transform that through what we call skill transformation.
Yeah.
So our people need to be knowledgeable. That will driven them to be to what we call a know-how. And with a know-how, obviously, we are not going to put resources at wastage. And that's actually an action or a need that is going, something that's going to respond to the need. Like I alluded to job creation, like I alluded to social economic, because we have to come up with activities that are responding toward social economic. You cannot expect social economic while we don't have activities that are speaking loud enough mm-hmm. to the need of social economic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way or another to do it. But
yeah.
I can always emphasize on training needs, training development, skill transformations, so that obviously the people are well informed.
Mm-hmm.
And that also including capacity building to capacitate our people, being local or individual, yes, of course. And that should not be left at the center of the government alone.
Let's pause here now and make a room for a scheduled commercial break. But when we do return, we'll be back with this particular news item.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele owuna osheenditho. Owuna aaniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa, ashike mboka yena oondjo dhoye otayeende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye, e to pewa epresenda 45% dhongushu yosheenditho shoye. Muule ashike, wemintetilo 45%. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa ethimbo weshipumbwa.
Easy money.
Tudengela nena ko 061 ne 00 5 7. Ano ko 061 ne 00 5 7. Oshipulela ko AutoCash.
And now we resume that conversation with Josiah Shipingana, who is a farmer.
Individual and everybody else, we should work as a collective, as a nation.
Mm. Now, Josiah, people are urged to plant trees wherever they are, whether at home, in schools, workplaces, or community spaces. Would you say the government perhaps needs to provide platforms or to provide land or places where actually the Namibian child can be able to plant a tree that can be a fruit tomorrow?
Yeah, I should not want us, I'm not dictating to you, so the government should provide. I think there's already a platform. We should just emphasize also on the grassroots. When I say there's already a platform,
mm-hmm.
obviously I'm looking at the primary level, secondary level, and so on, up until tertiary level. So the platform is already there, but we have got also training center or maybe green skin that are not in production
yeah.
that can also maybe be utilized for that purpose. Now, with that, bring us back again to the question of, capacity building.
Yeah.
From the grassroots to whatever level, including the tertiary level now. So it's not that there's no specific place, but the place are there. It's just for us to stand solidarity, unity, so that we work as a collective. It's not a thing of an individualism, but it's a thing of us working together
yeah.
and make sure that at the end of the day, we achieve results that are tangible, results that are speaking to the need. In terms of also to to build a strong foundation for a Namibian child up to a level of an African child, up to a level of the world, if we have to do that. Because also, once we are well informed, then you come up with what we call qualitative and quantitative, enabling you to compete in the at the level of the international market.
Absolutely.
And that, mm-hmm. that has to go our growth, the next product, obviously, to bring in foreign currency.
Mm-hmm. How can we integrate the youth into agriculture for them to actually come and take part in agriculture for us to work towards a food security so that it becomes not just something that we talk about, but something that is actually being done? Of course, there are still a lot of youth that go up to universities and pursue courses that are not agriculture related, and at the end of the day, actually sit at home with their qualifications.
Yeah, it's very simple. Like I said, that I looked at earlier to say the platform is there. It's just the grassroots. From the grassroots at the university or whatever, VTC, Vocational Training Center, then just to spice it a little bit from government and from non-government organization, individual. So if one come out of the school or maybe from a training, because remember, we have got a lot of groups. When it comes to agriculture, we've got those that came up with indigenous knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and then they also undergone through training, like myself. I'm not an academic,
yeah.
but I have gone through a lot of training, including the international. Now, for you to plug back, so you need support from the community level, individual, government. Now, the support we are talking about could be either infrastructures that are speaking to producing mass,
yeah.
and that is going to create job creation. And that is going to create social economic, like I said. But not only that, is to say, how are we going to spice to ensure that a Namibian child from the grassroots, from the earlier stage, they are motivated? Because I can assure you that everybody else,
mm-hmm.
being a minister, being a president, individual, I don't want to mention name or the level of formality in the society, when they go to work or whatever they are doing, they need food.
Mm-hmm.
And agriculture currently has been a pillar of the, you know, a food source, and also the how do you call it? The other things that are not processed. The raw material.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, this raw material is what we are using on daily basis, maybe being shoes, being what. So now, if that's not speaking up, then we will not have something better than that. But that should now come from Namibian themselves, Africanism, if I might say. It should not come from anywhere. So if it should come from anywhere, that means we need to bring people with expertise, but not for them to do the work, but only to equip our people, to enhance,
yeah.
to capacitate through what I call skill transformation. Mm-hmm. Then the expertise should be left with our own people to produce, rather than bringing expertise,
mm-hmm.
and then they do the work. That will not speak enough,
mm-hmm.
because the people must be equipped, and this knowledge and skills should be left with our people, and we continue.
Absolutely. Josiah, do you
yes.
think Namibia is well on its way when you talk about food security? Do you think Namibia is well on its way to food sufficiency, or we still have a long way to go?
You know, your question is so relevant. You know, Namibia is on its way towards food security.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm talking, I have just attended one of the regional 9th editions where farms, specifically on Maheke, it was in Odinyuru, where farms had come together, and this is, and I'm saying it's the 9th edition.
Yeah.
And I am at the forefront to support community, and one of the communities that I have supported, and I should not to say I, because it's a collective,
mm-hmm.
but let me use the word, but I don't mean to say I, as a sole person who was
yeah.
involved.
Mm-hmm.
I have supported a lot of community, but today I have got tangible results with what we call match wedding. That is the China community whereby they manage. And I'm calling again. I'm sorry if I diluted the negative. And I'm calling again because they have managed to produce a lot of beans. And these beans, today they are there,
mm-hmm.
nowhere to be seen. And to answer your question, if Namibia is currently on the right side toward self-reliable, self-reliant in terms of good tradition,
mm-hmm.
but
we still got a lot of things to touch. I'm driving you back again to capacity building, to equip, to training needs, skill transformation, because in order for us to achieve this, and also to produce in mass products and in mass, also to produce quality and the quantity that is going now to speak loud enough in terms of an international market. It's only when we educate, when we enhance, when we equip, when we do what is skill transformation, through training needs, to ensure that our people are capacitated to an extent. And that is going to also be speaking up to what we know, to what we call a know-how. And with a know-how, obviously, we are sure that we're going to able to achieve tangible results. But not only through talking, but through action. Now, action should start today, because time we have is only now. And today is the right time. If not now, that will never happen. And that should be left to the entire Namibian, not government, non-governmental, not individual, it's a collective.
Yeah.
I think, I'm convinced that Namibia is on its way. Not only in Namaheke, we have seen this year alone, we received quite, you know, good rain, even not everywhere. But when you look at the crop farming, when you look at the other people that are not doing only crop farming, cattle and the other stuff, I think we are on its way. But one of the issues that I need to bring in is to say, we should not always wait. When things got out of way, it's when we want to act. We should act now, with and without.
Okay.
That's my point.
Josiah Shipingana, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Okay. Meanwhile, in Rundu, Kavango East, to be specific, Kavango East Governor Julius Hamunyera Mbayuka joined learners from five schools in Rundu for a nationwide tree planting initiative to honor the late founding president Sam Nujoma. The five schools that benefited from the initiative are Dr. Dias Senior Secondary School, Kehemo Project School, Tuhingireni Project School, Dama South, and Rebecca Kambumbu Primary School. In collaboration with the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, conservation trees such as guava, mango, marula and papaya were planted by learners alongside Governor Mbayuka. Now, speaking at the event, Governor Mbayuka thanked the donors and expressed hope that the trees will grow strong and tall, serving as a living testimony to the positive change that can be achieved when communities unite for a common cause.
The memories of the late founding president, His Excellency Dr. Sam Shafishuna Nujoma, a visionary whose leadership and dedication shaped Namibia. We are not just gathered here today to plant trees, but to sow the seeds of remembrance, honor, and hope. The act of planting these trees saves a living tribute to Dr. Nujoma's enduring legacy, which to this day is an inspiration and a guiding to all of us. Trees are enduring symbols of life, growth, and resilience. Just as a tree grows and provides shelter, nourishment, and beauty, so did Dr. Nujoma nurture our community and Namibia with wisdom, compassion, unwavering commitment to justice, education, and environmental conservation. These three will be stand as a symbol of Dr. Nujoma's value and the positive change he championed. As it grows, it will remind us of the strength and resilience he instilled in us, encouraging future generations to uphold these same principles. Let this planting, not only commemorate a life well lived, but also inspire us to continue Dr. Sam Shefie Shunan Oyoma's mission, which is fostering growth, unity, and progress within our communities and Namibia as a whole. The trees donated today will not only enhance the beauty of our schools and community, but also serve as a living testimony to the positive change we can achieve. When we come together for a common cause, the following schools were identified to benefit from this donation. They are as follows. Number one, Dr. Herbert Diaz Ndango, Senior Secondary School. Number two, Kehem Project Senior Secondary School. Number three, well, let me do this, eh? The trees, they are 104. If I'm right. 179. So then I will start again this, to read the schools. Dr. Diaz Secondary School, they will get 25. Kehem Project Senior Secondary School, they will get 20. Tuhingreni Project Secondary School, they will get 20. Ndama South, they will get 20. Rebecca Kambundu, they will get 20. It ends then the allocation. I'm sure that the principal have noted the number of the trees you are going to receive. Let us recognize and thank all those who have made this donation positive or possible. May these trees grow strong and tall. May it symbolize our commitment to sustainable future. And I thank you. That's the end of the statement. Thank you very much for listening to me.
And now we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be bringing you what's a trading, what is making headlines on trading economics.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and what's happening in regards to economic indicators? The agricultural commodity. On top commodity losers are orange juice at minus 10.55%, with cheese at 3.59%, and wheat at minus 0.71%. Gains are led by cotton at 2.91%, with soybeans at 1.20%, and canola at 1.15%. On metal commodities, the top commodity losers are gold at minus 2.86%, silver at -1.80%, and platinum at -1.05%. Gains are led by iron ore at 2.51% and steel rebar at 1.38%. While on energy commodity, the top commodity gainers are natural gas, EU Dutch at 3.29%, natural gas, UK GBP at 3.23%, and crude oil, WTI at 2.71%, and Brent crude oil at 2.58%. Now, the U.S. and China agreed to cut tariffs post-trade war for 90 days. The U.S. and China have agreed to slash reciprocal tariffs and post new trade measures for 90 days in a bid to ease tensions from a prolonged trade war between the two world's largest economies. The announcement comes after the trade negotiations in Geneva, Switzerland over the weekend, the first high-level talks between Washington and Beijing since U.S. President Donald Trump imposed steep tariffs on Chinese imports earlier this year. Under the agreement, the U.S. will reduce tariffs on Chinese goods from 145% to 30%, while China will slash the tariffs on America imports from 125% to 10%. According to a joint statement, both the U.S. and China affirmed they will continue talks on economic and trade policy to build recent progress. Now, gold prices fell nearly 3% to $3,220 an ounce on Monday, hitting their lowest level in about a month as improved investor sentiment and a reduced demand for safe haven assets followed news of a major tariff rollback by the U.S. and China. And that's what we had for you on what's making headlines on economic indicators. For now, we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be bringing you news beyond the borders. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM Namibia.
But before we do that, let's bring you some sports news. The Namibia Sports Commission, NSC, hosted a meet and greet event last weekend with the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, alongside various sports federation representatives at the Plum Olive Oil Hotel in Windhoek. Now, Education and Sports Minister Sanet Steenkamp and her deputy Dino Balotti attended the engagement. Whereby she emphasized the importance of collaboration between federations and governments to achieve their shared goals. Let's hear more now from Sanet Steenkamp.
The lives of our athletes. Implementation of this program must be done in partnership, not should or may, must be done in partnership with federations and associations who bear the primary responsibility, the lives of our athletes. Implementation of this program must be done in partnership, not should or may, must be done in partnership with federations and associations who bear the primary responsibility for athlete development. I'm particularly proud, ladies and gentlemen, that Namibia will host the 2025 Regional 5 Youth Games this year in Windhoek and Swakopmund across 12 sports codes, that was already said. The games are a matter of national pride and a tremendous opportunity for youth. I call on all relevant stakeholders, key role players, especially those that are responsible for the preparation of Team Namibia, to really double your efforts and ensure that our athletes receive world-class preparation and support and nothing less. Nothing less. We are Namibians. We deserve nothing less. Furthermore, I urge the ministry's leadership at all levels to ensure meaningful ministerial presence and visibility throughout the games, and specific roles and functions must be allocated to the ministry officials and staff from our SOEs to ensure effective coordination, operational support, and national representation. We are not about interference. We are about supporting, listening, guiding, and developing. But I will not hesitate to intervene if there is a need to do so. And I want to make it very clear, ladies and gentlemen. We're not about interfering. You have your autonomy. You continue as you wish. All we want is a respectful, meaningful relationship with each other. You are not my children. You are our equals. I want to make that also very clear. So, in conclusion, I love conclusions. I wish to thank you all for your dedication and your shared vision. But I want Ms. Lavinia Karisis just to stand up for a moment, because my other staff you already know. She's our director of finance. For the past 10 years when I was an executive director, Ms. Lavinia Karisis is our financial advisor, and I almost met when I was in the office on a daily basis. Into our means, how best to cut out wastages, inefficiencies in our operations, and how to maximize the resources that we have. I'm not sure, Hillary, if you are known to everybody. So I wish to really thank you all for your partnership, for your dedication, and for a shared vision. And I wish to express my appreciation towards Federation leaders who actively continue to nurture talent despite, and actively they do that. And also for those who really improve gender equity in their sports. You not only improve gender equity, but you also nurture talent despite your limited resources. That is not easy. That is not easy. You constantly have to look for others to support you. Constantly come up with presentations. Constantly feeling like, do I have to go back to this entity again? Constantly lying awake as to how will I make that happen with all these requirements and standards that we set and that we have to follow. And I really want to put a feather in your cap today. And also express my sincere gratitude to all of you for maintaining sports activities during the most challenging and uncertain of times. With the economic pressure that we face and also recovering from COVID-19 impact. We cannot deny that COVID-19 had an impact in our sports life. We cannot deny that. We saw then the importance of what it means to be actively busy and engaging our minds and bodies. I really want to express my appreciation. And without being prescriptive now, I wish to propose to every federation to kindly ensure documenting the history of your federation for our national archives. You fulfill too much of an important role not to document all your history, your achievements, your accomplishments.
And there you had it from the Minister of Education, Sports and all the others incorporated in that. For now, we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace, and when we do return, News Beyond the Borders is coming your way.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back, and now for News Beyond the Borders. We start off regionally, then we move over to continental news, thereafter international news. We start off in South Africa, where they are celebrating International Nurses Day.
Cool. remarkable dedication. And today we take a moment to celebrate and honor the remarkable dedication, compassion and resilience of nurses, the heartbeat of healthcare systems across the world. This year's global theme, Our Nurses, Our Future. Caring for nurses strengthens economies, reminds us that investing in the nursing profession is not only essential for better healthcare outcomes, but also for the broader development of our societies. Joining us now is Dr. Megan Bortes, who is senior lecturer at Wits University, to reflect on the role of nurses in our healthcare system and what it means to truly care for caregivers. Megan, a very warm welcome and a happy Nurses Day to you too.
Thank you very much. Right. Thank you for having me.
Sure, only a pleasure. So let's start with a heartfelt thank you. And of course, and start with just asking, what does this day mean to you personally? And how do you see it resonating with the nursing community as a whole?
Well, I think in a community where often our profession is underappreciated, and for various reasons, it's a wonderful day to celebrate the profession, to celebrate what the role of nurses mean to the health of our society. And for me personally, it's a day to say I'm proud to be a nurse. I love the profession, I love the career, and it's one of those days that we get to brag about the fact that we have this noble profession.
And of course, nurses have always been on the front lines, from primary care clinics to emergency rooms, and even during the darkest of times, case in point, during the COVID pandemic. So what are some of the most under-recognized contributions nurses make to the healthcare system that the public should know about on this day?
Well, look, I think what's under-recognized is the role of the nurse in 24-hour care. We have a very unique position in that we are at the patient's bedside for the most amount of time. And that means that we get to know our patients better, we understand them better, we are able to connect better. And especially you talk about during COVID, that was a very important time when connection was the most important part because people were isolated from their family members. And generally the nurse was the person who had the most connection with the patient. And I think that can sometimes be under-recognized, especially in the times where we're living in, where nurses are struggling in difficult conditions of service and the connection is not as easy to make anymore. But for me, that's the biggest contribution of the nurse, is that ability to care and connect with a patient like no other healthcare provider can.
And here's the thing, Doc, this year's theme links to the well-being of nurses, to stronger economies. Can you perhaps unpack how investing in the nursing workforce translates into broader economic and health gains, particularly in the South African context?
Well, you know, the majority of our healthcare workforce are nurses. And when we do not invest in that particular workforce, we see poorer outcomes. And poorer outcomes for patients means a bigger burden on the economy and on the fiscus, because it means you have sicker patients, you have patients who stay in hospital longer, and therefore that affects the economy. And then also in terms of education and training, you know, research has shown that the higher the level of education of the nurse, the better the patient outcomes. And so if we're not investing in the education of our nurses, we're also going to see poorer outcomes for our healthcare system, and therefore it becomes a burden on the fiscus.
And we often speak about how overworked and underpaid nurses are. So what kind of policy or funding changes do you believe are urgently needed to truly care for nurses?
Well, you know, I can't tell you exactly what the policy should look like, but what I do know is that who the policymakers should be. You know, as the majority of the healthcare workforce, we have the least amount of say, the least amount of seats at the table, and so we don't get an opportunity to speak about what these policies should look like, how nurses should be remunerated and cared for in a way that makes sense to the nurse. Often policies are directed by medical doctors and other professionals, and that's fantastic. We need the expertise, but what's missing is the voice of the nurse. And if you bring the voice of the nurse into the policy table and into the process, you'll have policy that makes sense for the majority of the healthcare workforce.
And here's another
Meanwhile, in Zambia, projections indicate that the country will have the highest harvest of maize ever.
As Zambia's soil anticipates a bountiful yield, some people, who include President Hakainde Hichilema and other leaders, have turned to God for thanksgiving. Drawing from scripture, the church has led the people in presenting their harvest as offerings to God during a thanksgiving service held at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross in Lusaka. Gratitude filled in the air as the nation gave thanks to God for the rain that revived the land after a season of drought in 2023-2024. President Hichilema joined in thanksgiving, this time with rain and the farming season as the cause for celebration. Accompanied by First Lady Mutinta, Vice President Mutale Nalumango, and Second Gentleman Bishop Max Nalumango, President Hichilema led the congregants in giving back through a thanksgiving offering. Echoing the biblical tradition, seven trumpets were sounded and voices rose in unified praise, thankful, joyful, and strong.
Climate damage. Then you have a drought, you complain. Don't cut trees unnecessarily. We believe that clearing the area looks more beautiful. No. Nature gave us the trees to beautify the land, our yards. And erosion will be limited. Also, seepage of water will improve where there are more trees. Then the aquifer will improve, groundwater.
President Hichilema says God has remained faithful to Zambia, and so Zambia must remain faithfully devoted to him.
Let us work as a team. Church does its thing. Farmers do their thing, isn't it? Finance people do their thing. We all have our thing to do, but by working together, we'll deliver for our people. More importantly, let's love each other. Let love reign in our country. Where there's love, we conquer everything.
President Hichilema declared that this season could mark Zambia's largest harvest.
I remember this fellow here standing, encouraging citizens, farmers, not to lose heart. I even encouraged urban people that even kumbuyo kwa nganda, mungashange tungono chabe, mutamu. And truly, with God's gift of rain, farmers responded. Micro farmers, small scale farmers, medium sized farmers, large scale farmers. We even went to the commercial farmers who had come out of growing maize because maize was unprofitable. We reached out to them to come back to maize, our staple food.
Meanwhile, in Angola, a cholera outbreak in Angola kills nearly 600 people.
Angola continues to fight its worst cholera outbreak in 20 years, with the disease spreading to 17 of the country's 21 provinces since January. The outbreak has caused nearly 600 deaths and more than 18,000 cases as of early May, according to United Nations agencies. We walk around with loudspeakers, urging people to do what they can to get rid of this evil. From personal hygiene to collective hygiene and the issue of environmental treatment and environmental health. Burning garbage or burying it, right? That's our message. It's hard work. We're working with both the residents' committee and the community mobilizers, as well as the fire brigade, which has been really helping us lately since the decrease in cases began. In reality, this is the dynamic. Angola's Ministry of Health and its partners respond to the outbreak through case detection, deployment of rapid response teams, community engagement, and a vaccination campaign that has already reached 1 million people. We're tired of seeing death. We're tired of seeing patients with these problems. We also want to rest, and we can't. Since January 13th, when we started battling cholera, we've been fighting it all the time. So we want at least one day of rest, but we can't rest. We are the rapid response team, and we won't stop until this is over. This outbreak is affecting people of all age groups, especially those under 20 years old. Angola's last major cholera surge in 2006 killed over 2,700 people.
Africa's rapid urbanization threatens bad biodiversity.
At this forest at the National Museums of Kenya in Nairobi, Peter Mruithi spots a Hadada ibis. He says the birds are loud, but more importantly, they are survivors, thriving despite the many dangers and changes they face in the Kenyan capital. He goes on to state that they can be seen everywhere now because they have adapted to the city's noise and scraps. Mruithi, a passionate bird watcher, has been tracking Nairobi's avian residents for over a decade. He has, however, noticed a troubling shift in the fortunes of some bird species.
Their natural habitat have already been taken, and we are forced now to survive using any means. And to survive now, they have to look at other alternative of where to find the food and where to nest. Some are favored with that adaptation, like a kite. You find that in Nairobi, they are breeding in all year round.
Africa's urban land cover is expected to triple by 2030. In Kenya, Nairobi's population is growing at 4.1% annually, while Lagos, Nigeria, sees a staggering 5.2% urban yearly growth rate.
We used to have trees or a section with the tree in each and every quarter. Nowadays, it's cleared because of the places of the land in Karen and Upper Hill. So you find they are bringing down all those trees. And when they are doing so and come out with big or very high building, they are causing a lot of trouble to our band.
Mruithi says this rapid expansion is swallowing the natural habitats of many birds, fragmenting ecosystems in the Kenyan capital and inviting invasive species like the Indian house crow. A recent study conducted in Kenya and Nigeria and published in Frontiers in Conservation Science shows that as cities grow, bird diversity shrinks. It shows the continuous loss of species that pollinate plants, control pests, and spread seeds. It further highlights how urbanization favors generalist species, birds that thrive in varied conditions, while specialists like forest-dependent hornbills vanish. Experts say birds are key indicators of environmental health. Environmental architect Professor Alfred Omenya says African cities can grow without sacrificing biodiversity, but getting this balance right requires a shift in priorities. He says planning for birds means planning for green spaces and creating tree corridors.
The whole idea is then how do these pockets of green within the city, whether it is low density developments inside of the city or no density development, those are areas that must not be touched, like our parks, our open areas, road reserves, riparian wildlife, and all those sort of things. But we need to look at them in a coherent way and then link them.
African cities struggle because developers often bypass recommendations of environmental impact assessment reports. Profit often comes first, not nature.
What we destroyed when we came in here, we destroyed the ecosystem. We destroyed the system that was working as a holistic thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So now we need to restore it, despite having built in different sections within that particular system.
He says developers must be held accountable for preserving habitats. According to Omenya, African cities can't keep allowing developers to build over every green patch and expect birds or humans to thrive. Enoxicolia, CGTN.
China and the U.S. agreed to lower tariffs in a major trade war de-escalation.
China and the United States are suspending tariffs on each other's exports as talks to lower trade tensions between the two countries continue. As part of the agreement, the U.S. will only keep a 10% tariff on Chinese imports, and Beijing will extend the same treatment to imports from the U.S.
We have reached an agreement on a 90-day pause, and substantially moved down the tariff levels. Both sides on the reciprocal tariffs will move their tariffs down 115%.
The measures are effective for 90 days. The U.S. dollar rose against major currencies on hearing the news. Stock markets in Asia and Europe also reacted positively.
We enter into a 90-day pause period for negotiations, which both the Chinese and the United States are very committed to. And the Chinese on their side also go down 115% to 10%, and they remove the countermeasures that they have in place.
In March, the U.S. announced tariffs on all countries worldwide, but those against Chinese goods were especially punitive. China fired back with its own tariffs.
Meanwhile, a U.S.-owned toy factory in China fights to survive Trump tariffs.
Around four decades ago, David and Jason Chung's father fled communist China and resettled in California, starting a toy business that has stayed in the family. His sons built up the business over the decades as Hunter Company, Inc., and now they sell toys to U.S. mega retailers Walmart and Target. But now the world's two superpowers are locked in a tit-for-tat trade war, and David Chung says the family business is now in crisis because it and the people it employs sit on both sides of the Pacific.
The best way I can say is that for us it's existential. We might not exist.
U.S. and Chinese officials in Geneva said Monday they had agreed to cool trade tensions, reaching a deal to pause tariffs for 90 days and to drastically reduce levies on Chinese goods. But for the Chung's family business, the trade war had already taken its toll, and they have significantly cut the number of staff at the southern China factory that builds their toys.
We have reduced staff by 50%, so we've gone from 400 workers to 200 workers. We will be looking at additional layoffs in a month, in another month's time. We've stopped all business development as far as product development, and upgrading our facilities here, which we had been in the middle of, coming into 2025. And any plans for expansion right now are on hold.
The Chung's father opened the factory 35 years ago as Beijing was opening up China's economy. On paper, Hunter is Trump's bogeyman. It's a Chinese factory taking American jobs, but their situation isn't so clear-cut. The Chungs also employ 15 people in California. They too would lose their jobs if Hunter fails. Trump has said tariffs will incentivize companies to reshore manufacturing, or at least drive it out of China. Hunter illustrates why economists say that's unlikely. There are not enough people with toy-making expertise elsewhere. The machinery they need is hard to move and would cost millions to replace. And most critically, there's no time to solve these problems before Hunter runs out of money. Back in Bay Area's Union City, brother and CEO Jason checks their remaining finished products and takes stock of losses. The company already has $750,000 in cancelled orders that are stacked throughout their warehouse.
Right now, basically, this is what we have left in this facility. There's no plans to bring anything in right now, and every day as things get shipped out, it's just getting less and less.
Jason said he's now looking for options to mitigate the tariffs. But even if they moved production to another location like Vietnam, it's still a path shrouded in uncertainty.
I'm trying to figure out, you know, how to mitigate the tariffs, what path to take for the company. But because there's so much uncertainty, I don't know what will happen tomorrow. I don't know which countries will or will not have tariffs, what those tariffs might be, the timeline. You find yourself just thinking in circles.
What he's clear on, though, is that moving to the U.S. is out of the question. He says wages here are so high that manufacturing stateside would be even more expensive than staying in China and absorbing the tariffs.
And now that has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. To stay tuned for the Onkunana Dengue program brought to you by David Shambe. That is our news program in Oshiwambo alongside Benedict Simon. And also to make sure that you read up on the stories of on the social and economic stories that we've covered in today's The Villager newspaper, all you have to do is send a text message on 081-200-4144 to subscribe. Now from Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place. That is from 1300 hours to 1430 for On the Radar News Bulletin right here on your number one talk radio station, Egan FM. Goodbye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Umthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Ongum ngeshifa nwahara kushivika oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM enya mkuru olongaha ningi kwata fami na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konora hita tume heari imwe ne heari imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116 mumberewa konora hita tunatu mbali o hita tubatatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who you know doesn't have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katutura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katutura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we have been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future. Eagle FM.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.